BizNews has got a number of WhatsApp channels, and one of the busier of them is the energy channel. There, a gent called Dr. Calvin Kem keeps things going with his discussions about nuclear. There's lots of interest in nuclear. It's coming back strongly around the world and indeed in South Africa. But a big breakthrough, I think, guess, to a degree today, is a strategic alliance that's been secured by C5 Capital. Interesting company. We'll find out more about them in a moment. And Sibanye-Stillwater, who have got piles of uranium as byproducts of the old gold mines at Randfontein Estates and Beatrix. We'll find out what the strategic alliance means. Andre, lovely to catch up with you and really looking forward to you coming to our conference in March next year in Hermanus. It's going to be
very excited about the conference.
Yeah, opportunity for you to, well, to tell members of the BizNews tribe a little bit more about the way you're seeing the world. We're going to talk about C5 Capital in some detail a little later and about you, but let's start off with this announcement that you've made today that you have a strategic alliance with Sibanye-Stillwater. I know Neil Froneman at Sibanye has for a long time been looking for energy independence, but on the other hand, he's also got a heck of a lot of uranium sitting in those dumps of his. So what does this alliance entail?
Alec, it's unusual for a growth investment firm like ours to form a partnership with a global mining company like Sibanye-Stillwater. But the nuclear renaissance is enabling all kinds of new and imaginative partnerships. And we very much value Sibanye-Stillwater's deep bench of nuclear expertise, uranium expertise specifically. And then, as you say, the company has some really outstanding assets that could potentially be uranium producing in the future. And at the moment, the uranium market is constrained. And so everyone is looking for additional supply. And since we are investing across all of the nuclear value chain, having a partner, having a resources partner like Sibanye-Stillwater is enormously valuable.
But does the partnership extend to potentially the creation of a small modular energy plant for Sibanye, given that they have been trying to be energy independent themselves for a long time?
Well, that certainly is a possibility for the future. It's not on the cards right now, but that certainly is an area of potential for the future. The mining sector is a natural off-taker for advanced nuclear energy generation. And as you say, a micro-nuclear reactor is ideally suited for servicing and providing clean energy to mines. And so I think you're absolutely right that in the future, advanced nuclear energy will be transformative for the mining sector, both in terms of its net zero footprint, but also in terms of its energy independence and energy security.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of deep-level mining that has been abandoned because of the erratic supply of electricity in South Africa, and who knows what could happen there. Neil's got a long history with uranium. I recall going off with him to go and see Afrikaner Leases, which was then later, it became part of, I think, Uranium One, which he ran and then became part of the Gupta Empire. I think it's not being mined at the moment. But at one point in time, that was uranium was doing so well that they were mining uranium underground at Afrikaner Leases. Are we getting anywhere near to that situation being economically viable again?
Yes. Now, as you say, Neil is one of the most seasoned mining executives when it comes to uranium. And he's built an exceptional team and recently appointed Greg Cochran to lead a new uranium division for Sibanye-Stillwater. Yes, the price of uranium has gone up very considerably, about 233% over the last 2 years. It currently trades at just above $80 on the spot market. And given how constrained this market is becoming because of a whole range of factors, rising demand because of the demands for clean energy by artificial intelligence, the number of nuclear plants that are under construction worldwide, and then on the other hand, geopolitics, which are constraining supply, I think there's a lot of scope for the price of uranium to grow further and to increase further. And that, of course, will increase the profitability of uranium mining and enable assets that were previously not considered viable to become viable again.
But I guess with the assets that Daniel Frydenman has in his portfolio now, he doesn't need to go underground.
No, just he doesn't.
Give us an understanding, if you would, of how much uranium is in those those old gold dumps or that was mined in the past as a byproduct of the gold mining.
Between the two assets he has, the Cook mine and the Beatrix mine, is about 60 million ton, which is a very considerable amount of uranium. And as you say, it's on the surface, doesn't require deep level mining. And so therefore, these tailing dumps can be mined very cost efficiently.
So is that part of this whole project between the two of you, that you will find the offtake and he will do the production?
Well, we are investing across all of the nuclear value chain. So we invest all the way from raw uranium through to the nuclear fuel cycle, through to advanced nuclear reactors, through to nuclear applications like nuclear medicine, and all the way through to nuclear fusion. And within the scope of those investments, the different investments we have on our portfolio, there's very significant demand for raw uranium product and for having secure and cost-efficient supply. And in a market where the prices in the spot market are rising and supply is getting constrained, having a partner like Sibanye, who is developing a world-class uranium division and has two ready assets, could in the future be really valuable.
Tell us a little more, if you would, about C5 Capital. It's an interesting company. It is a you South African, as we can hear, but it is very much a global operation.
Yes, very much South African. Born in the Eastern Cape and grew up all along the Cape coastline. And my heart is still in South Africa, even though I have a international business career. And very grateful for what BizNews does for South Africa and for accurate reporting and relevant reporting on South Africa. C5 is a global investment firm with offices in Washington and London and in Vienna and Austria. And we invest globally. We have a focus on three areas that are closely interrelated: cybersecurity, space, and advanced nuclear energy. And I've recently launched an energy security fund that's focused across all of the nuclear value chain. And we see nuclear energy as the most important energy source for the 21st century and the most important energy source for energy security going forward.
It's also got a bit of a bad reputation, though, Andre. You, being South African, will know what happened when we had the Rosatom and the Zuma and the Guptas involved there. I'm sure there are clean parts of it, but is that reputation well earned?
I think the South African history with Jacob Zuma is a very peculiar and particular tale. And of course, earlier in my career, when I was involved in the Scorpions, I was involved in the investigation of Jacob Zuma. I think what Mr. Zuma tried to do is not indicative of the nuclear industry as a whole. The transaction that he tried to structure with Putin was perhaps one of the most corrupt transactions at the time in the world. And the technology that Russia was trying to force on South Africa were really aged and decrepit Generation 3 nuclear reactors. So it was a bad deal overall for the country. And I think that sort of left a bad taste in South Africans' mouths around the nuclear industry. But it's not how the nuclear industry operates globally. And the nuclear industry is a highly regulated industry. It's perhaps one of the most regulated industries in the world. It's both regulated nationally and internationally. And actually, if you look at the track record of the nuclear industry in South Africa at Coburg, it has an impeccable track record, both from a safety perspective, from a world-class regulation point of view, and from an international compliance point of view.
So if we have so much uranium in South Africa, as you have just unpacked for us at Sibanye and presumably other suppliers as well who had old gold mines, Why are we not, or are we a candidate for building more nuclear reactors here in a way that we don't have a repeat of what we saw at Kusile and Medupi, where they just became a plundering pot for the politically influential people?
Yes, South Africa has one of the largest uranium reserves in Africa. And so there's huge potential to scale and grow the uranium mining industry in South Africa. And as you correctly say, Alec, there's scope for vertical integration. If we have a substantive uranium production in South Africa, there's no reason why we can't potentially also create a domestic fuel cycle and integrate that with additional nuclear generation capacity. And that industry is still very viable in the country. The Kuba continues to make a very valuable contribution to the country's energy generation overall and the country's clean energy supply. It provides energy, most of the energy for the Western Cape region, and about 10% of the energy nationally. And then, of course, there was the Pebble Bed program, which was a victim of Jacob Zuma. And the Pebble Bed program was, at the time, 2010, 2011, at the cutting edge of advanced nuclear in the world. But fortunately, despite the fact that Jacob Zuma sabotaged that program to embark on his corrupt Russian transaction, a lot of the value chain of the Pebble Bed program is still in South Africa and can be re-established and revitalized, as the Minister for Electricity, Minister Sprutla Ramakopa, has outlined over the course of the last year.
That's interesting. So it can be dusted off, that Pebble Bed modular reactor.
Absolutely. All that investment that was done, all that innovation, all that know-how that South Africa created can be dusted off, can be revitalized, and it's potentially worth billions of rand for the country.
So what has to happen for that to occur?
Well, I think clear policy from the government, which is now happening with the government of national unity. We're seeing very clear policy from the government around the nuclear industry and a very clear statement that nuclear is part of the country's energy mix. It's a reliable source of clean energy, and it's investable. In addition to that, extending the life of Kuberg, because that's a valuable asset, and it continues to make a very valuable role for the country. It's one of the most cost-efficient sources of energy in the country. And then creating scope for new projects. And some of these projects will be government-led. Some of them will be private-public partnerships. And some of them, like our project, will be entirely private sector financed and led.
So the relationship with Sibanye is part of, when you say our project, would that be something that would then move into the next level and have something along the lines of a electricity producer?
Yes, we created a feasibility study, completed a feasibility study last year for a private sector funded SMR network for South Africa, and the results of it was very positive and encouraging. And so we're doing everything we can to revitalize the nuclear energy ecosystem across the country. And uranium producers like Sibanye Stillwater has a very important role to play in that ecosystem and in that in the entire value chain, both domestically but also potentially internationally and globally.
How big would that reactor be?
So the small reactors are anything from the small modular reactors are anything from 80 megawatts and upwards, and you can modularize them, so you can add them together to get to 320, maybe 400 megawatts. So you've got to do sort of four of those on a modularized basis to get to the capacity of one of the Kuberg reactors. And then you can go all the way down to a micro reactor that does about 1 megawatt. So there's a lot of variability and scope. And the great strength of this technology is that you can really tailor it to the needs of the offtaker. And the big change is that we're now in a situation where you can go with clean energy directly to the offtaker. You used the example of a mine earlier on, but similarly, you could create a reactor specifically for an industrial plant, like X Energy has done in Texas, or for a data center. And that's really what has led the major cloud computing companies like Google and Amazon, Oracle, Microsoft, to start investing into nuclear energy. They are really interested in creating nuclear generation capacity specifically for data centers. Again, that plays to South Africa's strengths because South Africa is the leading country in Africa for data centers and has the largest concentration of data centers in Africa, and therefore naturally is well placed to be a leader in both clean energy through nuclear energy and artificial intelligence.
It sounds a bit science fiction-y, but clearly it's science fact. If you can go down all the way to one megawatt reactors, what about the safety, though? Because that was always the big issue in the public domain.
Yes, fortunately, the safety issues have been solved. The micro and small reactor models that we are using at the Generation 3 level all come out of the armed forces and have been used safely in submarines and in aircraft carriers in a kinetic environment for decades without incident. So these reactors are entirely safe. The new generation 4 reactors have an ability to switch themselves off if there's any kind of difficulty or concern. They switch themselves off automatically. And then because of TRISO-fuel, or what we used to call in South Africa, the pebble bed fuel model, where you have enriched uranium, which is encased in a three-layered graphite ball, there's no proliferation risk. So it's very hard to proliferate this kind of fuel, and the amount of byproduct that the reactor creates is also very significantly reduced. You can store it on site, and then it's a really useful byproduct because you can also mine it for radioisotopes for nuclear medicine. And of course, South Africa remains to be one of the leaders in nuclear medicine worldwide.
What drew you to this field? Indeed, what drew you to having essentially an investment company, given your background with the Scorpions?
I like building things, and I like doing new things and trying new things. And I like doing things that can help make a difference. And I've had the good fortune to work with people who are very accomplished in the financial services sphere and in the investment sphere. People like Robin Rennick, who recently passed away, who was a mentor of mine for many years, and the Fleming family, Vincent May in New York, who built AEA Capital, the Stenbeck family, who acquired my consulting business. And having worked with very accomplished investors, it was inspirational, and it encouraged me to try my own hand at it, even though I didn't have an investing background. And it's only something that a foolhardy South African will attempt to do, to build an investment firm from scratch with more of an operational and an entrepreneurial background than an investment background. But fortunately, I've had great mentors and great partners, and we are now approaching our 10th anniversary and have about $500 million of assets under management and continue to grow the firm.
And the areas of focus, we haven't even touched on space yet, which we must, but nuclear and space as two of the areas, energy, I suppose you could say, rather than just nuclear. What was it about those areas that appealed to you?
Well, in South Africa, we grow up with this beautiful starlit sky, which in the evening just sort of looks like polished diamonds on a velvet cloth. And you can't help but be inspired by our beautiful Southern Cross and the beautiful constellations which you can see at night. And so that always drew me as a child. And I had a little telescope and a book about the constellations. And then, of course, as a kid, you begin to watch programs like Buck Rogers and Star Wars that inspires you further. So I guess I've always been drawn to the beauty of the sky and the mystery of the universe and space. And so I really became interested in investing in space because so much of cybersecurity infrastructure was moving into space. Starlink is perhaps the best example of that. Elon Musk's constellation of low Earth orbit satellites, which is now playing such a decisive and transformational role in digital communications worldwide. And with so much of cybersecurity infrastructure moving into space, I became interested in investing in space. And once you're in space, you understand there are only really two sources of energy. One is solar, which is used by the International Space Station today. And the other one is nuclear, because nuclear is the only energy resource which enables us to go fast in space. With nuclear fission, we can cut our travel time to Mars from 6 months down to 3 months. It took about 6 months to sail from the Netherlands past the Cape in the 17th century, and it's about the same time now it takes to get to Mars, and we can reduce that time in half with nuclear fission, so we can go faster. And then secondly, if we plan to return to the moon permanently, as NASA currently does with the Artemis program, it's really only nuclear energy which can enable you to get through the lunar night in good order. And so nuclear has an application too for planetary exploration. And in Axiom Space, our portfolio company that's building the successor to the International Space Station, we have been exploring the possibility of including a SMR or a micronuclear reactor on the new station to complement the solar energy, which is the only source of energy at the moment for the existing station.
So you've given us a little inkling of one of your investments. Can you share with us some of the others? Because these are wildly different to the kind of investment discussions that one tends to have on an ongoing basis.
Well, Axiom is a very exciting investment. Axiom is building the successor to the International Space Station. It also has two contracts with NASA to design and build the two new spacesuits. The last spacesuits that were designed goes back to the previous century, to the 20th century. And now, of course, we have a much more diverse range of astronauts, not just former fighter pilots who go into space. We have older people, we have different genders. And Axiom very recently revealed its new spacesuit, which they designed in partnership with Prada. So they also brought some element of fashion to the spacesuit that will be used for the Artemis moon landings. So Axiom is a very exciting investment for us, because it's really about the way in which humans live and operate in space, and about the importance of being able to not only do research and develop in space, but also potentially to do like manufacturing, and to do cloud computing and energy generation in space. And so there's huge potential in the space economy. And of course, we now have Elon Musk in a very prominent role in the U.S., working alongside President Trump. And I'm sure that the profile of the space industry as a result will go up even further.
And other investments?
Our other investments are in cybersecurity. So we have a number of cutting-edge cybersecurity companies that work closely with Microsoft. For example, we have one of the leading Microsoft partners in managed services that operates security operation centers that look after the cybersecurity of big corporations, of not-for-profits, of governments. We have a cybersecurity solution called IronNet that we deployed in the defense of Ukraine, which enables allies to fight together in cyberspace and to defend together in cyberspace. Very necessary in Ukraine to defend against Russia, so that they can share the bad things that Russia is trying to do to them, also with their allies like the United Kingdom and the US and other NATO allies. So a whole range of very exciting and innovative companies. And ultimately, it's not about technology, but about founders, the people who start and build these companies. They're very unusual people. They tend to have very unusual minds. Sometimes they are unusual personalities, but they all have certain traits in common. They're very resilient. They want to make the world a better place. And they have an innovative solution that they think can help change things for the better.
Andre, before we go, I'd love to get some insight from you on Starlink. You did mention it in passing. Here in South Africa, it's been a political hot potato, but has such wonderful applications across the continent. The one side here is saying that there's an incredibly strong lobby from the incumbents in the internet provision area. And here you're talking about MTN, and which is very close to government, as we know from all kinds of areas, and Vodacom, and that Starlink would be a cheaper and more efficient alternative to it. And so it's been kept out of the country. Do you think that this is something that somehow, given Elon Musk has now met with the South African president, Cyril Ramaphosa, will be overcome, or what can we do here from our side as members of the public to say, hey, we need this?
I think Starlink is inevitable. It's prevalent, and governments can't really stop Starlink from coming. Governments can't really stop individual consumers from using Starlink. It's something that's really hard to regulate or to keep out of a market. It's prevalent, and it's definitely coming to South Africa. It's just a matter of time.
Well, we look forward to that day, and I'm sure there are many people in the rural areas for whom it can't come fast enough. We also look forward to seeing you at the BizNews conference and to that first project, that first nuclear project in South Africa. Which do you have any kind of timeline on when you might be able to update us on the go ahead there?
Well, we're in negotiations with the government at the moment about our next steps following the completion of our feasibility study. We had a very good visit from the Minister for Electricity to Washington, D.C., and very good talks there with him. And I'm confident that the government will be supportive of something that will help solve the problem of energy poverty in South Africa, and that potentially could be a major source of employment, of economic growth, and potentially also play a role in the African energy export market.
André Pienaar is the Chief Executive of C5 Capital. I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.